sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Well, welcome, church planters. My name is Chesley. I got two really fun guests today. You know, my friend John at Reliant, he's here. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, doing good, man. Yeah, fall's kicking in. I'm a little whiny about it here in late August, kicking in already, but it is, I get to wear my pants again. It's nice. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, him and I were just talking about the fact that it was 69 as a high yesterday here. We live kind of on the same latitude. 5 hours away from each other, and it was brutal. Yes. It was brutal, and so John's sporting the fall beard. If you don't see him on the video, it's just phenomenal. It's a work of art. I mean, you're doing a good job, buddy.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Trying to do something right here. So
right, and then I got my friend Logan, who I'm jealous of because he's suffering for Jesus as a quote unquote church planter in San Diego, California, doing well, I'm sure, with his son. He's like, I have no clue what you guys are talking about. But no, he
That's
does. He's
have.
From Ohio. That's why he moved. He's like LeBron. You live in Ohio, you leave Ohio, and you go to Southern California.
I like to say LeBron followed me because, oh. I mean, I got here first, and then he came out here. Fun fact, we graduated the same year, and lucky for me, we never played each other in basketball because I would be on a highlight reel somewhere on the wrong side of a dunk.
Yes.
I know you can't tell on this podcast, but I am a whopping like 5'9", 5'9" hey, and a half. And
some would say that's a perfect height. Some would say that's the great height.
I'm 5'10". I feel you. Yeah. No, basketball was I was going to go pro. I actually, funny story, you guys will think this is crazy. I actually held myself back in high school because I skipped kindergarten so that I could actually go to the NBA. Stupid me. So I went to ninth grade twice and I got an academic letter the first time. So I literally got told by the counselor of the school I was coming into at a different state, you are the stupidest smart kid I've ever met in my entire life. And I say that because 2.5 years later, I'm playing ball. We have a 5-star recruit on our team. We're in practice. I'm 5'10 then. I didn't grow past my sophomore year of high school. I play point guard. He's 6'9", 5-star recruit. He steals the ball from my friend. I decide I'm going to go take a charge and he lifts up and tomahawk jams it. On his way down, his shoes catch my shorts. And I get de-pantsed right in front of everybody. And there's people all in the gym. And
that's an incredible story.
So I have been posterized and and other things at the same time. So it's wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, this could be, it's a hot seat episode, so it could get vulnerable. But you don't have to answer this live. But I am curious, eventually want to know how many therapy sessions it took to get through that core memory.
Yeah, so. You know what I did? I just pulled it up and act like nothing ever happened. Like I literally and people are like, dude, you all right? I said, what? I've had a couple stories like that. Most of them in the military, had a few too much to drink before I was, following Jesus very well. But not what this is. I don't need to have a therapy session right now, because, but yeah. No, Logan, tell us about your church plant. What are you doing? Why San Diego?
Yeah, well, we've been here for 15 years, and God just made it clear. We have been a part of a church for about 15 years and was a campus pastor, and over time, God made it really clear through a number of different events that God was calling us into plant organically, I should say, and kind of lead a church that way. And so I always thought, coming out of college, I got saved in high school, went to a Bible college, had no background in church or church planting or anything, but really felt like God wanted me to plant a church. And so we went and helped for about a year with my youth pastor in Boston as a part of a team, then did a couple stints. I was a youth pastor in Ohio at my home church, and then came to Southern California to work where we were. And just God has made it, like I said, abundantly clear that this is where he wants us to be. Now, I'll tell you, the weather is incredible, but there's challenges to Southern California. There's a lot of challenges to Southern California. And primarily, there's just not enough churches. I mean, the last statistic I heard is 10% of the United States population lives in the state of California. And if you took every church and doubled up the services on any Sunday morning, big to small, doesn't matter, you might reach 3 to 4%. And if that's true, like, we need more churches everywhere. I'm on the west side of Chula Vista. It's kind of a forgotten part of Chula Vista. People don't know where Chula Vista is, but we are about 15 minutes from the downtown San Diego area, maybe 20, depending on you get traffic, you could be really long, even in a short span. But man, we've been here so long and have so many relationships. God is not done with us here yet. And so there are moments where we're like, man, we miss people. We miss seasons a little bit, but we really just feel like this is where Jesus has us. And he's put us in a place where we are able to be here and plant what's called New Story Church. So we're brand new. We're still kicking off the website even right now. So that's how fresh and new we are.
There we go. Yeah, no, that's great. So you've been in the throes of planting a church, and obviously everybody that's listening to this, they can empathize. So if you need to pray for somebody, pray for Logan right now. I'd love to hear about how are you doing the funding thing? Like, what is it that you're trying to do at this point?
You know, right now we set off just kind of a really brand new kind of prayer request within our church core team. We've got about 40 people right now that are committed to this church, and we're moving and growing and gathering together. It's been really neat. God's opened a door. I'm in a church right now, a church building that's been here for a long time, and a pastor I've known for about a decade. And an older pastor who I think every pastor needs to be like this pastor, because here's an older pastor who's been part of a church community and loved the city and done different things and has said, hey, how can we help you? And we want to be involved in church planning, and what we can do is open our building to you. And so we're gathering here on Saturday nights. But previously, I've just, number one, I'm a co-vocational pastor. So I work for an organization called Restoration 225, which works with entrenched churches all over San Diego County and connects them to the needs of families involved in foster care. But then as a church, you know, it takes money to fund a church. We have a really cool, unique situation where right now our church is giving. We have some people that are giving, and then we also have some young people that are growing in Christ and learning what that looks like. And I had to teach through our giving dictates the mission and the ministry of this church. So that's how fresh and new some of our people are, brand new to Christ, brand new and getting saved, brand new and getting baptized. And so teaching about giving and generosity. And for the remainder of this year, we're just looking to raise a bump. So it's going to some of the churches that we've known. Previously, like I said, at our campus, I didn't do any fundraising for that. I'm doing fundraising for our nonprofit. But going to these churches that we know and say, hey, we want to raise $25,000 to help give us a bump to kick off for the next year, 25 and 25. That's our goal. And so it's relationships one at a time, and then casting the vision for what we're doing and the people that we're reaching and the things that we're doing, in hopes that some of the churches are a little bit bigger and more established, not just here, but around the country, will jump in and say, hey, we want to support that. And finally, I'm planting with the Send Network. And so they have a process of helping us. I always think everybody should be part of a network. I'm part of the Send Network, but I get to work with a lot of different Presbyterian groups out here. I'm working with non-denominational groups. We in San Diego, especially, we know that we're better together. And so I know that's been a cliche statement for the last 4 or 5 years, but we really do think, hey, we may not be the same on every single doctrine or every single philosophy, but we really do want to help each other. And so we see a good number of these guys and planters out here doing that and supporting each other. So that's a little bit about our funding strategy right now.
Really cool. I was talking to a pastor in, I forget, it's not Indonesia. It was the United Arab Emirates. So they have like 6 or 7 state-sponsored religions that can worship there. And so, you know, if you're coming in as a Southern Baptist, good luck. So everybody all pools together under the Anglican church. And like the evangelicals like hover there, like everybody's working together. So you have like so many different streams of the Anglican church Like, I feel like that's where we're kind of getting to as a, you know, even nationally in America, is you're starting to see these guys go, hey, we might have some weird little theological difference, but the reality is our city is suffering and we need to work together and love each other. And how do we do that well? We've not historically been able to do that in America very well, but I think as we become more post-Christian, we're going to continue to see more and more of that, which is, I think, a good thing, not a bad thing.
Yeah, I would agree.
So let's talk about your biggest challenge in fundraising for ministry at the moment. Like, what is the thing you're like, man, I need help with this? If you could tell me what that is in a nutshell, like, what do you think that would be?
I would say two things. Number one, it's always time. For most church planters, you're doing a lot of different things and you have a little bit of time. And so if you chopped up my time, I could give 40 hours a week to fundraising and maybe that would go well. But then, and some people do that and they're really successful. We've been here for 15 years and so we've jumped into work. And as I said, as a co-vocational pastor, which I think is probably a little bit more common than we talk about, bivocational, co-vocational, people that are working jobs and being in the city and making relationships with people so that people come to the church so we can make disciples. But again, you have to put some time and effort and energy into fundraising a bit. And so I'm learning that fresh and new right now with New Story Church and saying, okay, what amount of time do I give and what efforts do I put into? Because one thing that I know with fundraising, and it depends on the network and depends on the church background, some churches are like, we love what you're doing. You're planting a church. We want to give you $10,000. Here you go. We love you. No strings attached. Some people are like, here's $10,000 and there's 30 strings attached. We want you to come out to this. We want you to be part of that. We want you to do this. We want you to do that. So it's really trying to navigate not just the amount of money that you're going to receive, which in fundraising is really the amount of time that it's going to take to raise the funds and make those connections, but then also to keep up with the, which is appropriate too. Everybody has their own belief in, if we're going to give you money, we're going to invest in you. We want you to like partner back with us. But then again, you're pulling away from the time that you have in the city. I've got friends that are traveling all around the country right now with partners. And I'm like, man, they're not in their city. And so they're missing out on some of the relationships that are right here that you need to grow the church to be sustainable as it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Jesse, look like you're about to say something, but
no,
I agree.
I'm going right. to hand it to you. So effectively, you're already talking.
Yeah.
It makes my job a lot easier.
Perfect. No, it's great. Yeah. Logan, I mean, there's so many things, even in just some things that you said earlier, something that we talk about a lot is how funding shapes your mission. And, you know, you name talking about with this core group of 40 and what that looks like. It's like, hey, guys, a lot of our giving shapes. You said mission, and I missed the second, or ministry and something, direction, maybe.
Yeah, it was mission and ministry is like mission. The mission of the church that we want to do. And in the ministries that we have, the programming, all those things, I had to teach our people that money doesn't just come from nowhere. It comes from us. And so when people come and say, Pastor, we want to do this, we're like, okay, well, this is what our church, you know, our budget looks like. And as our church grows or our people give, the dreams and visions that we have around the different ministries in our church and the mission of our city, like the mission is always to make disciples, but that can happen a number of different ways. You can have a big outreach event. If you don't have a lot of money, you're doing like relationship, handing out popsicles. You have a lot of money, it's like, we're going to have a carnival. Those are very different things, but the same mission to reach people and make disciples.
Yeah, absolutely. And how that shapes and what that looks like and that way of discerning that as a body is this beautiful thing, and you're casting invitations to them. And then I think within that, how your funding comes also shapes your mission, where if you're starting to get some funding with strings attached that pulls you out from your city, which again, we're not saying there's anything wrong with that, but that may not be in line with the mission that you had at the get-go. And so it is shaping it. And so I think you're having some great discernment around that work of like, where do these funds come from, and how does that shape who we are together as a people of God in this neighborhood, in this space, and what that looks like. And I think that's like a great first start. It's just acknowledging that whatever your funding model is, isn't neutral, right? It is not a neutral thing. It shapes who we are and what we do. So then what is that vision? What are the things that we want to do? And then how do we get towards some funding models that help that? So I first just want to like acknowledge that for the audience to hear, like you saying that, I'm like, man, that's already such a great spot to be because of how that shapes. And so I think, yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge that for a second. We can stay there and then, or I can jump into time, but yeah.
Well, I like great. What Logan was talking about, like as he talked about what they're doing and how they're communicating it. The thing that came to me was velocity. Like I talk about this quite a bit with church planters, but you first have to be clear about your vision and your direction and your mission so that when you're giving, when you're talking about generosity and giving as discipleship in in a church setting, we talk about the giving that you have creates velocity for the mission. So it is the speed at which we can run towards our mission. So without it, we're going to still do it, but we're just going to go a lot slower. So I love what you said there. It's like, oh, we could do this or we could do this. We're still going to do it. But the scale and the speed by which we can is often determined by the amount of money that we have. And so this is why it's such a very important conversation to have. So, yeah, I think that's the first step. Like, you did good job, like communicating that. Like, that's been wonderful. So for me, I think trying to hear the challenge behind of everything is like, where do I spend my time? Is that kind of what you're saying? Is how do I, if you're articulating it, it'd be like, how do I spend my time for the maximum amount of return on investment, if you will?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I mean, we're already going. And so I'm working throughout the week. I have 5 kids, by the way. I've got a 12-year-old and a 1-year-old. I'm everything that probably there's a book about of like, hey, if you're not going to church plant. And then there's my picture on the cover. And thankfully, the Lord's put us in this position and it's working and God's been really good. But yeah, you start to look at the time because, again, even with fundraising, that's important. But my family is the most important thing to me and making sure that our church sees that, knows that. But, you know, you're juggling all these plates. And so when I talk about time and I talk about raising funds, it has to have a good return on investment. I have one incredible partner right now in Birmingham, Alabama, that honestly, like if you guys could get a church on this podcast, this is... They are not just financial partners. They are, in what I've seen in all my years of ministry, probably one of the models. They would say, no, they're not. They've got a lot to learn. But they fly their missions director out here just to check on church planters like me and my family. There's a woman named Angie who comes out and has dinner with us like once a year. And she goes [S2] Wow. [S1] To Vegas and these other partners. They send us gift cards. For school supplies and school clothes at the beginning of the year. They call us and check on us. They send us, they have teams of people and life groups that are sending text messages and anniversary cards. I mean, that is one that does take some time for me, but man, it's worth it because it's not just the financial return on investment because they've poured into us financially, but man, the relationships, when I'm seeking wisdom, I'm able to go to people at their church and their church about 1500, like I said, in Birmingham and shout out Valleydale Church there. So that's worth the investment right there. But then again, as I said, you look at another church that is maybe they're going to require so much from you or multiple trips. Like I get to do one trip a year for their missions conference, which is awesome. And it's a busy week, but it's a good week. And there's a lot of fulfillment there. And then there's also groups that you do a lot for. And then the financial return is like, and I don't want to get into like dollar, but sometimes you'll do a lot for, and you're like, oh, this was not a lot of return. Man, this was a lot of work. And so, and then the week to week, just preparing messages and discipling people and building teams and all those things. And so, yes, the discernment of trying to figure out what and who to give my time to.
It's
really difficult.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And because all that's good work, right? Like in no way are you saying like, oh, these things aren't good work, but what's the return towards this mission? And this is the thing. There's tons of good work. There's tons of things to go and do. But that's not what God called you and your family to right now in this season. So what does that look like? So man, I think it's great. So time is that piece. Let me ask a few questions to kind of get a scope of the land a little bit more. And then we can get into some thoughts and maybe share a little couple ideas together as you head in this season. Like you said, you know, before you guys are a few weeks in, you just launched doing this thing a bit backwards. And now we have this 25K goal let's get after it. What does that look like? Where do we invest time? So when you say co-vocational, break down that time differential to me a little bit, where you don't need to do hours, just like percentages. How much is spent on restoration work? And then how much is spent kind of news story? How are you trying to divide that time?
Yeah, probably 75-25 in that, you know, work-related hours, not including family and all those things, but trying to break it down more right now on the front end with restoration. And you've got about 25% of your time that's left to figure out how to pour into the church. And again, it's kind of the loaves and fishes model where it's like, Lord, here's what I got. I've got a couple loaves and a few fishes, and I need you to multiply this. Yeah. And I think that's, again, where a lot of church planters find themselves, whether they're even raising their funds full-time or not, it's still loaves and fishes, multiply this model a little bit. But yes, the good thing about the work that I do, which is co-vocational for those who don't know, if you're on this podcast, is really the intentionality of working a job that is coinciding, like it benefits the ministry that you're in. So sometimes bivocational pastors want to work a job until they can get full-time with the church, and they're kind of pulling down their hours. The work that I get to do is with churches in our city and our community. I get to meet with schools and social workers, community leaders. Like everything I do pours into our church. So when I say 75-25, there's a little bit unfair advantage that I have in the work that I do, where I still get to wear the pastor hat a lot. I get to wear two hats for it. But other people would be like in education, and they're like, I want to keep being an educator because I get to be around kids and families while I'm planting this church, because it offsets the amount of money that I need to raise, or I can put this fundraising money towards another staff member or team or ministry or outreach, any of those things. And so I just said that for clarity's sake, because it's kind of not, I'm doing this until I can get enough money to just lead. It's with the intentionality of I'm doing this alongside what I do, and it works together for the benefit of the church and for the ministry and mission that we're setting out to accomplish.
Yeah, I think that is so important. The fact that you have overlap, oftentimes when we're looking at jobs as pastors, especially in the bivocational front, they're looking at a job to pay the bills and hopefully can figure out a way to get full time. But I think more and more pastors should have the approach that you have, which is, how can I do something that honestly what I'm doing, it actually serves both at the same time so that I feel more in alignment? And I think, you know, there's a lot of careers out there that allow for that, and more that I know of. And so the fact that you're doing that, I think that's a real clear delineation we need to be talking about more. Is what are the types of jobs that leaders can have that serve both your family from a financial standpoint and the mission from a church planting standpoint? So anytime we're talking about ROI, that's one of the first questions I ask, and you're answering it well. So yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we got 75-25, a bit of a tension split, gift of it being a bit together, how that and where time gets dedicated. Then a goal, financial goal, I heard you name 25K and 25, so $25,000 and 25. What is that getting you towards? What is that funding helping you do? Is that funding you through 26? Is that making you get through the end of the year? Like, where is that going? How's that help?
Well, that's to help us offset some of the ministry needs that we have. When we stepped into this new church, a little backstory, we transitioned out of our campus and we're praying. And one of the coolest things that happened to us, and this is why I said we're a little backwards, we literally started at the end of June as a prayer meeting. Like, let's gather and let's talk about, we really believe this is what God's calling us to do. And there are probably a number of significant moments that God used in people to like clarify what we're doing. But we hadn't fundraised any money yet. We were like officially launching in 2026. But so we go, we gather, we pray, we talk about all the things that we're talking about right now, what this looks like, what church looks like, what our vision is for the city. And the next week was July 5th. And it's, of course, is the day after July 4th. And so we had some people at the church, and there was one young girl in particular who at this point is not a follower of Jesus. And is part of this group and this gathering who wants to come with us. I've been praying for her for years. And she comes up to me, she says, hey, are we going to meet next week? And I was like, I mean, it's July 5th. and let me talk with the church where we're meeting at for this prayer meeting, because we hadn't even had those discussions yet, really. And he was like, yeah, sure. You guys can meet here Saturday night. It's good. So I think, okay. So we decide July 5th. Okay, we'll gather. We'll kind of like, I'll teach. We don't have any worship, nothing yet. We'll just gather our families together as we get. We had like 45 or 47 people that showed up. And some people showed up that we didn't even know who were invited by other people. And I was like, okay, Lord. So we started to go. But as you know, in a church plant, there's needs for kids ministries and different things. And I've done all those things. And we would generally say, hey, we're going to take some time. But we just kind of moved into it. And we haven't had the stress of feeling like, all right, Lord, the church was really gracious. We're meeting. We're like, hey, we're not going to charge you any rent right now. Just come and gather. And I was like, wow, that's a miraculous thing. That's a miracle that God has done. But we knew that that wasn't forever, but that was to help us get started. And some of the needs for the ministry, even here at the church, John trying to help update some things to get us going. Everything from like speakers and sound equipment to just like ministry check-in. Every single thing you have in a church plant is costly. So most people out there who've never planted a church or started a business don't realize that, like, you know, to have a website costs money, to have speaker system costs money. You know, they just think that this stuff comes and you're like, no, we need a certain amount of money. And in fact, 25K is probably, everyone's like, you need a lot more than that. And they're right. We do need a lot more than that. But God has been gracious. And even the fact that we're in a building right now with a really incredible rent rate right now, which has been a huge blessing to us, allows us to say, hey, let's take this $25,000 to get some of the necessary items that we need for our kids ministry, for everything from banners to A-frames. If you've never bought an A-frame sign before, you'll be shocked when you're like, that A-frame plastic sign is like $200, and that doesn't include the signage. So we're giving all this education to people out there. If you're thinking about planting a church, they're like, okay, an A-frame sign, note that to self, that's expensive. And if you're a person on a church planting team or just somebody who's attending, they're going, man, we didn't know our pastor and the church team, they're paying for these things. So all the kind of upstart things to get going is what that initial bump is. And then we'll kind of look at where we are and what we need to help with team and staffing and some of those things to be sustainable. But that's where I go back to where we've told our people. And I've taken some of this a little bit from Peyton and Bo in church plantology and all of those different books and saying, okay, if churches can plant around the world with nothing and no one and no money, can we do some of this here? Which, yeah, God's been able to bless us and help us to go through this. It just looks a little different, but we still are moving forward in that planting effort. So $25,000 is to kick up all these things as we get into 2026 and evaluate as a church, what is the actual number that we need and what's a want and what's a need? And that's another thing in funding. You can spend a lot of money on a sound system that's like $4,000 or $5,000 that you don't actually need until you're like 300 people or 400 people or 500 people. But, you know, that's to each their own. So,
yeah, man. And you're in that space, right? Like, that's the thing where I think in church planning we've gotten, and this is, I think, what the CPP guys have always been really good at, is going like, hey, you are a person called by God to a place. And you're doing a weird thing and you're trying to plant a church for this place. And that's where you're at. And you're discerning that. And that's what it looks like. When you start saying 25, I'm like, if this startup, that can be low. But you're like, but here's our needs and here's where we're at. And so I love that. It's great, man. That's great. So many things you said I want to aha on, but we could be here for 5 hours. So so I'm hearing, here's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing, all right, we got this 75-25 split. You're trying to go, hey, I want to know, what are the things, how do I invest my time wisely? And this 25K is going to get us going. Why? Because we started praying and people showed up, which is wild. It's close to my church planting heart, you know, the ways that we've started and the ways that, you know, it's just in that living room, I was gathering people for discipleship and prayer and here in the city and doing those things. So I love those pieces of it. But those are the things you got going. What are the avenues that you are already exploring or have explored towards that 25K? And I think that'll probably be my last fact gathering question, Chesley. I can see in Chesley's eyes, he's like, all right, bro, come on, let's get.
So right now for us, are you asking me right now, what are the avenues that we are pursuing?
Yeah, I'd love to hear kind of what avenues have you already pursued? What's maybe it could be things that have worked well in the past, things that haven't worked so well, but kind of what's the general game plan right now? And then I can kind of, because I could, you know, give you a playbook from zero, but that doesn't include your network, things you've already done, things you got moving. And so let's get there and then I can jump in with that.
Yeah, the two big ones are like network based. And so going back to the SIN network and applying for different grants, they have startup grants that we can apply for, but also for the church planter funding. And so that's really exciting to be able to go through that process and receive funds that help us to move forward. And then also the network of churches. One of the cool things is when we planted before we replanted a church and launched it as a campus, had its uniqueness to it, but we didn't do a lot of fundraising. I did have one church partner that's still partnering with us in this new church plan. And I wanted to do a little bit more fundraising, but just, again, we were just in it and growing and going. And so we didn't. But the cool thing is now I'm not going back to some of the same friends. I'm going to them for the first time and saying, hey, we've had a relationship for a long time. So it's network of friends in and outside of the city. So I'm starting with the network of friends that I know first, which is probably common. And then the third tier, which we haven't got into, which would be just individual donors. There are people that are all over that may not go to your church, but really are endeared to you as a person or the work that you're doing. And it may not be a church that funds you, but they're a person that's like, hey, we want to give and we want to write a check to this work to help it start up. And we've seen all three of those. And so right now, the top two pursuits are number one, network, number two, church partnerships. And again, discerning what is required from all those. And some of them, again, are like, hey, we want to help plant churches, and so we're going to write a check, and you don't have to come here every other month or any of those things. And some of them have more strings attached. And then getting into those individual donors as we begin in the next year to cast more vision and be more outward facing. We've been really strategic of not putting our church out there because we're discipling and training and growing right now. Although, as I said, we've got a number of people. We've had seven people in the last 2 weeks show up out of just personal invites that I'm like, okay, well, they might be part of this core group. Like, who knows? And so we're just thankful for it and growing that way.
Yeah, that's great, man. I love all of that. That's really good. And so I think, let me toss some spaghetti on the wall and then you can just kind of respond from there. Does that seem good? Let me toss some things out and go.
Hey, I'm waiting for all this. I need all
that's
this.
Great. That's great, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. So that third tier that you talked about, that third, like individuals and what that looks like, that's a lot of what Reliant's done for the long haul. And that's been for that kind of sustained giving over time. And I think as you're naming that, I think that's going to be a really key thing for you, possibly into the future, even in just both of your works, both of your lines of work, right? That kind of sustaining, even large nonprofits, you think about like the Bible Project right now, is actually largely sustained right now by monthly small donor giving individuals. Now they're doing large campaigns towards that. You'll be a more individual thing, but that's becoming more normative in ways of these people supporting that. So we're going to come back to that in a minute. But what we're talking about, this 25K startup, what does that look like? And then how do you invest that time, use that time well to get there? Here are a few things that occur to me. One is there a person on your team already, like your startup team, that could help you do some of that work of filling out some of these applications with Send? If we go to that first group and just, hey, it's just some of that's just, it's just application. It's just time and it's vision. And so I imagine that this is somebody that ideally has a good chunk of your vision, is ready to go. They understand it, they get it, and they could quote unquote ghostwrite this thing for you a little bit. They have some of the basic information, can fill out those grants and get moving, which saves you some of that time of doing that. Or even if they don't have the vision and they can't quite articulate it, it at least lets you them get some of the forms filled out, some of the I's and T's, so that you can come in and they can go, hey, I need you to write, give me two paragraphs on this, give me three paragraphs on this. And that kind of brings some time. So that's one curiosity I have is like, hey, yeah, there is a temptation. You're the guy. But is there somebody on your team that can come alongside and just help lift some of that work and application and grant? Because that is a biggest part of that stuff is it's hard. And also, they may be a more gifted writer than you may be, which helps grants go better too. So that would be a double win. So that's one kind of spaghetti on the wall. I'm curious if anything sticks out to you there.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's one of the things that I'm always learning to do. I think one of the challenges for every church to be successful is that it's team oriented and not individual oriented. And I think one of the things that's hard for a lot of probably church planners, and me included, is that I wasn't always a church planner or a lead pastor. And so for a lot of my life, I was the associate pastor, the youth pastor, the life groups pastor, the everything. And so you are the number two, number three, depending on how you view youth pastors. You know, I have a high regard for them because I was one, but, you know, sometimes they're like, they're pastor number seven out of five pastors. But
it might be the hardest job in the church, if we're being honest.
For sure. Yeah, because they're the most, youth are like the most brutally honest people in the world.
And it's not just that. You have five kids, so you know you're gone like four times a week. And then you have to do all the things the regular staff does. And then you got nights and weekends. Then you got to be a good mom, a good dad, and a good husband. Like, it's just, it's an interesting.
No, you're right. So we got to deal with the parents
because they think all youth group, you obviously, all you do is dodgeball and pizza.
That is true. But I think that you get in that routine and that rhythm of doing everything, that one of the first lessons, and I'm still learning it, is like, okay, can you do this? And I've gotten better and better. And in this new plant, I think I'm getting even better even the conversation to say, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? What do you see in this? And so meeting with guys, our team, and we've got a husband and wife duo that's been really cool. We've got a bunch of them right now. I think this is the one of the best groups of people. In fact, I said this to my wife, like, this is the kind of group of people I'd want to plant with. They're new to faith. A lot of them are new to faith. They're excited and hungry. They're like ready to learn and to do and to serve and use their giftings. And so, yeah, I think that there are people on the team right now that are ready to go, and it's just plugging them into the spots. But that's a great thought, because I think when it comes to like network stuff, sometimes naturally we're like, that's got to be me. But that's a great thought that I haven't really put a lot into. Because normally it's like, well, this is Send Network stuff. This is network stuff. This is church planning organization stuff. This has got to be in my lap, in my hands. So I appreciate you saying that, John.
Yeah, man. Go ahead.
All right. I'll go. I think, the other thing too is we're not taught that the number one thing that we've got to do as lead pastors is give away ministry. Especially when you're lead pastoring or you're planting a church, right? So I think, if I look at the entrepreneurs in business that are the best, they're the ones, they ask for help all the time. And so what is it that you're clear about that you need help with that you would be like, normally I would do this. I'm not great at, writing that stuff out. But the reality is we think we've got to do it. Just what is it in your job description that you can give away? I think that's a great ROI discussion, period. Because if you got 25% of the time, you're required to give ministry away. You don't have the ability to do it, or you're going to just stay small in the process. The other thing, just because I know Nam pretty well, do you know your regional director and what they enjoy and what really lights their fire? Because when that's the type of intel you get when you are writing the grant, that they're more likely to say yes when they get excited about what they're reading, you know? And so
that's good.
I would say definitely figure out who your regional director is and what their pet, their pet projects and the things they really love giving money to. 'Cause especially in the SBC, they have them.
Yeah. I know I've got a great relationship with a couple of guys out here, Chase and Jeremy, and I'm so thankful for them. In fact, that's why I joined the Send Network, as I looked through different networks, and there's so many good ones, and that's why I said I partner with different ones and go to gatherings. We've got a San Diego Church Planters Movement. It's not really a network out here per se, but it's been really good and helpful as we gather, and they give like scholarship startups and partner together and bring in speakers and so many other things. But really, just the friendship that I have with some of these guys that were right here as the church planting catalysts and the directors in the area. And so I've got a good beat on that. And I think that we do. I think that we are going after the same things, which is just, number one, it's just disciple making. It's reaching people who don't know Jesus. And I mean, every church should be about that. And then my hope is, in heart, is that we would eventually then multiply this, right? That we'd plant more churches. But again, that takes more money. So like part of the fundraising challenge is saying like, I say two things to our church. Number one, I always say the power of every local church is predicated on its people, not its pastor. Meaning like, I am disposable. Meaning like, our church is Jesus church. I just get to be on stage more often than others and get to cast the vision and share. I'm also learning that this is probably a little different, but I want to give the vision away. You're like, what? You said like contextualizing. What is the vision of our church? One of the things that I've learned in my life and I'm still learning is sometimes a pastor has a vision. One of the craziest things I see right now is that like people, they like parachute into a city. They don't know the city. They don't know the people. They have a vision for that entire area. Then they're gathering people and casting the vision. Those people are from the area, but don't have the same vision. And they're trying to get them to buy in. What I want to do is like, you know, flip the mic and say, what do you see are the needs in our city? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we do at our church, and even now in 6 weeks, we are putting in a care closet. So we work with a lot of at-risk families. We partner with our nonprofit and we have a software platform called Care Portal that we use. And we literally have agencies put in needs and our church gets to like drop off beds and car seats and strollers and so many things like, but that's birthed out of what are the needs in the city. But that also helps us to know what kind of, as we move into 2026, John, it's like, what kind of money are we going to allot to all these things? And then also, even if it breaks my heart and none of our church is after it, then maybe that's not the thing that our church does. Maybe that's mm-hmm. a Logan thing and not a new story thing. And I'm discerning that. But as we kind of like look at the vision and not just giving away jobs, but giving away vision, like, what do you see for our church? Because I would love, you know, some of the people on this core team right now to be part of the critical lead team 5, 10, 15 years down the line. And every church planner wants to be the church planner for a lifetime. But the truth is like, I've been at different churches already and different plants already and different campuses. And so I want to build a church for the future with or without me, which means that we need a funding stream that's sustainable. And we also need a vision for funding to kick off for the future as well. And so I know that's all over the place. I'm kind of a scattered rabbit trail, you know, chaser on these podcasts, but
No, you're good, man. You're good.
Sharing some stuff.
John, anything else that's coming to mind, bud?
Yeah, no, I think so for that, just to name, I think some of those things are there. Hey, this is that help for that first grant stuff. And it's going to be a good litmus test as you're naming, inviting people into the vision and all that. It's going to be a good litmus test too. That person sends you back a draft that says like the vision of our church is ABC. And you're like, I thought I said, you know, XYZ, you know, like, okay, hold on. And but that's good. And they'll do good work. And then there's that. But then also that first grant might be a little more lift. But then that second grant, oh, hey, I just copied this question over here. Hey, Logan, how do you feel? And it still comes from your email address, right? Like send, don't come after me. Logan's doing the work. But it's a matter of like, hey, how can you kind of invite people in towards that funding, what that looks like? And then those last two categories that you talked about, I think you already have some great tools going towards it. And I'm going to go ahead and name them here. But one of the things in any kind of, there's one thing that is an ask to everyone is an ask to no one. That's just a general rule for me. Now, there are ways to do marketing, right? Marketing is the classic ask to everyone, but even that gets more, you know, all these sorts of things. But like, so when you're talking about church partner networks, like, hey, these are churches or people that I know that I'm going to go to, or these individuals, when you go, hey, you want to give that direct relational ask, like you've already been talking about, you've been doing. And I think that's really good. And so when you go to that, you're going to have that conversation. You've already connected with them. And the thing you want to do is make sure that you clearly express the need. And your statistic you shared at the top of the hour of you could double the amount of services in every church and you're still only reaching 4% of California. Like, that's a clear need. We need new church plants. We need what this looks like. How would you do that? And then the answer to that need, here's how we're doing it. And y'all, God's already at work. Here's a quick story about the things that we're doing. Let me share a story about a person got invited by so-and-so and now they're part of the team and wanting to help get started. Like, this is why this area of our world is desperate and hungry. And here's the things we're answering the needs. We're doing these things. You're showing that. And then, hey, I want to give you a direct ask into the things that God is doing. Would you be a part of what God is doing? And here's our current need right now. We're hoping to raise $25,000. And you're going to, it's going to be real tempting. This is, church planners love to do this. They make sure that they want them to know every single detail of the thing you're going to do with that. And it just overwhelms them. $25,000 helps us get going and get started to meet this momentum and to get some basic things like sound system and signs so that people know where they're at, that they can feel welcome into a place. And these people that are far from God can come and feel comfortable. That's what we're trying to do. And we're trying to raise that in the next 2 months to see if we can get going and really get happening here. And I think you can do that with both of those networks that you talked about, both the individuals that you may already know that could be Aunt Susie out in Minnesota or, you know, Ohio. You're from Ohio. It could be Aunt Susie out there to that friend at the church. But I, man, my encouragement would be, I think that you could, for $25K, I think you could think through, and you probably have the network and the list and stuff. You could probably think through 20 to 30 folks that are both those churches and those individuals that you're going to go, that's my list and that's who I'm going to. And I'm going to tell them it's a big goal. Hey, you're one of 30 that I'm meeting with and I'm trying to invite into. Will you help us get going right now? And there's some different strategies. I don't want to get into it now. You could talk about a tree. Like, I'm looking for an anchor partner at 10 and then a bunch of people at 500. You could do that. Or you could just say like, hey, would you help us get there? Would you give, would you consider giving $500, $1,000 or $3,000 towards this? This is the need right now. And there's a couple benefits to that as you talk about long-term sustaining. One, you're going to find some folks that are like, hey, we can't do that, but we might be able to give $50 a month. Great. You got some sustaining partners, or you're beginning to build that team that some people just love to give one time. They love those one-time gifts. You can circle back next summer. You can circle back end of year and go, hey, here's this next need. So that would be my encouragement, man. It's like, hey, let's get you some help on those grants. And then on those two networks, let's get really clear. Here's the need. Here's how this church plant's answering that need. And I'm going to ask you directly, will you be a part of that? And you can mix that with individuals, those organizations. My encouragement would be, get a list. Don't be afraid to like, hey, you're one of 25, 30 people. And I'm asking you, would you be a part of this, helping us get going? So I'll stop there. I know we're at time. Like, we've been going for a while. So anything that sticks out, yeah.
I'll add a couple of different things too. Like, what you're going to find is that you are going to do a little bit more upfront work doing these smaller donors, but the back end to keep them is a lot less of a lift. And so I think moving that direction is definitely helpful. And then the other thing I would say, this may challenge you a little bit, is when I look at ROI, I'm from the business world. If I'm a big donor, $25,000 doesn't get me excited. $250,000 does. And so I would be willing to go 10X, and the amount of work that you're putting in for a 10X ask is actually about the same amount of work that you, it's just a little bit more fear in the asking, right? So I would say, you know, okay, with the 10X ask, I'm just having to deal with me rather than doing a whole lot more traveling and stuff like that. The reality is, even if you miss it, you're going to get a much larger outcome than you would if you were just asking for 25K. And if somebody does come on board and wants you to go travel and do that other stuff, they're probably giving you double what you were asking in the beginning or more. And then the ROI is like, okay, this isn't as big as what it would be if I was going that direction. So I would always say, ask for more, because the amount of work that it's going to take to do that is going to be a whole lot less, even if it feels like the same, because the profit margin is so much higher. If I can use that totally sinful word right there.
No, that's good. That's good advice. And it's helpful. I think that that's probably one of those things that I had a couple people share that with me and just saying, hey, 25K. And I said, well, you know, we're just trying to start off in 25 as we assess and look at 2026. And, you know, a lot of people are like, man, we're going for 250K, 300K to raise to start a church. And I recognize that's how much it costs, generally speaking. And any day, you know, if we weren't in this place, you're spending, you know, $3,000-$4,000 a month in rent. That's a pretty common number in San Diego, Cal, at a local school or rec center, maybe around the country. I don't know, but I know out here, like, that's a pretty common number that you're paying for rent. That doesn't include anything else. And so, yeah, I know the number has got to jump up, and I got to be a little bit more bold in that and dream a little bit bigger, because we, like I said, helping people clearly know that the whatever money that comes in for a local church and a church plant is not about the pastor. And that's something that I'm learning to try to separate those two. Sometimes people see you and they're like, you're asking for $250,000. I'm like, no, I'm asking for $250,000 for our church for the next, you know, several years to help us to reach more people. And so, yeah, those are good pieces of advice. And I thank you guys for that.
Yeah, I heard this quote, actually I read it yesterday, so it's a business quote, but it really does help here. There's only one thing worse than asking somebody who can afford only $100 for a $1,000 offer. It's offering a $100 offer to somebody who could afford $1,000. And so you've got to be discerning as a pastor, but you should learn how to err on the high side and come down rather than start low and move up. I think that's the biggest thing that I see pastors and church planters make. The biggest mistake they make is they start low. Once you start low, you can't move up, but I can always start high and move down lower. And so that would be the challenge, I would say. If you want better ROI for the amount of effort you're having to put in, the amount of time, even with individual givers, I would start high and then move down low. And even if you get a high, you know, you get a high giver, an anchor giver, like John was talking about, then the ask that the strings attached for them is going to be so much more doable, because you're not having to worry about, well, I still need to go over here and I need to get these 15 donors to get me my thing. So I would think about how can I think through my ask in a way that will, one, allow me to have these individual givers that don't have a whole lot of work on the back end, but two, when I am with them or I'm with a corporate giver, a corporate donor, how do I go big enough that excites them, and then work my way down to where it's manageable for them if they can't do it?
That's great.
Yeah. And the only, for the fun of it, Chesley, the pushback.
What's that? John and I can't be on the same podcast.
That's great. can't have it. Can't have it.
That's great.
But it's all,
where
it's
am
all
I wrong, John? Where am I
no,
wrong,
it's
man?
Great. It's all just a matter of like, hey, what's the thing in front of you, right?
Totally.
Scale. And so totally. I think if you wanted to, because part of what I hear you saying, Logan, too, is like, oh, I need this 25K and like next week would be nice. I don't know if I have the time for a full $250,000 campaign. That it is in some ways the same amount of effort if you have the network. And some of this depends on your network. It's just network related. There's so many things that we're not going to get into in this podcast. But Logan, I'd love to chat. Jesse would love to chat more.
Well, and this is guts too, right? Because I would say, you know what's easier than finding 25 people to give me $1,000? Finding one person that will give me 25.
Totally. So what is that network? Who do you know? And that's another thing is like, you could go and like, hey, you know, if you feel like you have the right 15 people that you could go like, hey, you got a chance to talk the next week. I need to talk to you about a need we have and we need it fast. Like, here we go. Like, you feel like you could have that kind of conversation. Then like, that's a whole, so it's all a scale, totally. Right? That's that 25 in a week. Let's turn that around. Why? Because you know, you have the right folks. You want to take some more time. I mean, that's all the scale that can slide, but agreed. It's like, yeah, if you know the folks that are ready to go, then like, yeah, just reach out. But all of it is still, who are they? Who's the person in front of you? And what does it look like to have relationship and partnership with them? You know, Chesley and I did a breakout together, and like, that was one of the things we talked about. It's like, hey, this is relationships.
It is.
Right? This isn't, I'm editing a blog right now for a CPP about like, this isn't about extracting things from people. This is about like discipleship and partnership and what that looks like. And that looks like for some people, a $30,000, $50,000, $100,000 ask. And for others, that looks like this. It just all gets shifted and based on who are you, who's your network, what's the need, all those sorts of things. So,
yeah. And to be honest with you, like it's getting the asks under your belt. Like if I see a bunch of church planters, they get so scared of asking for money. I'm weird. I get giddy asking for $1 million. There's something about it. I'm like, I get this fun for me. It's I don't know. But some people like that would scare the crap out of them asking for that much money. To me, I'm like, it feels like Monopoly money anyway. So why not ask? you know? And so I think learning how to get in a way, like get comfortable in a way that you're asking enough, that you're okay with the no, and you're asking to a point that you're almost cracking a smile when you're asking, because it feels so ridiculous, you know? But you can't crack the smile, almost. So I think, I know it sounds weird, but those are the tricks that actually help us with giving, and, or, you know, when we're trying to build and fundraise for this. So, I mean, and John's not wrong. Like, the relational piece is important. It's finding your style. It's finding what works for the situation you're in, and then working on it, because it is a muscle. I didn't start asking for millions of dollars. I started asking for 10, you know, and then I went, oh, somebody would give it to me. You know, I wonder if I asked for this. Oh, somebody would give it to me, you know? So I think, you know, for you, Logan, is like finding the thing that stretches your faith a little bit, and then finding the relationships. You probably already have them. And this is what I would say as your action standpoint. If you don't already have a written down list of the people you can call to today, that would be where I start. And for whatever reason, we tend to get writer's block, but I would just go over it and just keep writing and then make the call. And then if you're like, I have a thing like that, I think that they would go for, double the ask and then move down from there. If you did those three simple things, I can almost guarantee you, if you would do that work, you'd have yourself funded by the end of, you know, next week, if you would be willing to do the work.
Yeah. We call it name storming around here.
Yeah.
You go, you don't say no for anyone.
No.
And I could get into all sorts of things, but it's tempting to say no for people. I think one, that takes away their autonomy. It takes away their, I'm not saying, I'm just writing down that name. And the best thing I can do is just invite them into what God is doing. And that's good, but it's hard. It's that writer's block. We start thinking of, here's all the reasons, no for that person, no for that person. It's like, no, just write them down. So it's good.
Yeah. Logan, does that help at all?
Yeah, I was going to say, my last thing for you is turn the mic. I'm like, hey, you know, Chesley, John, after we get off this podcast, you guys send me your list of big donors and I'll reach out.
There we go.
I'll reach out to those guys.
Oh, that's funny.
I'm building the network right now. Chesley, you sound like you've got a bunch of guys. So I think, you know what? Whether they know Jesus or not, I'll make that phone call.
Yeah.
Chesley's out. And then we'll come back.
Chesley's got the big. Yeah. And I had 130 Aunt Mays on my team. That's how I planned it.
So no, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. It's all denominational. Like, you just have to ask, you know, and that's the beauty of NAM too, is they have the money. They don't have a lot of guys that have the guts, you know? And so that's helpful. Obviously they need to see it attached to mission. But you do it there, you know. I also know there's a process, but I also know every denomination I've ever been a part of is a good old boy system. So if you know how to work it well, and a lot of church planters don't, but if you do, they will be on your side. So yeah, definitely. And I can still help you with a couple names.
We'll take them. We'll take
them.
Great.
Sounds good.
Reach San Diego, and then we can do some vision trips that they can, you know, come out here, and I'll take them for the best tacos that exist in San Diego and maybe even the United States of America. So,
hey, I just got to figure out how Reliant can partner with either Restoration or News Story, just so that I can find my way out there. I need it somewhere. Were you busy in January, February?
I need it. I'd love it.
Yeah,
I'd love it. You guys come out anytime, and we'll do our best to show you a good time. And we're about 15 minutes from the border, so I'll take you down to the Mexican border. And if I have enough friends, we'll take you over across the border, everything. So
yes.
Yeah, good stuff.
That's awesome. Well, Logan, thanks for hanging out with us. John, you too, bud, as always.
Be a Chesley.
Good man, you, hey, guys, church planting is real. It's tough. And we know you need help. So we're here to help. And it's been a good time hanging out with you guys. We'll see you next time on the Church Planter Podcast.